From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with the first program in the children's western series Straight Arrow. From May 6th of 1948 on the Mutual Broadcasting System, it's Stage from Calvados.
Keen eyes fixed on a flying target. A gleaming arrow set against a rawhide string. A strong bow bent almost to the breaking point. And then...
Straight Arrow! Nabisco Shredded Wheat presents Straight Arrow, a new thrilling adventure story from the exciting days of the Old West. To friends and neighbors alike, Steve Adams appeared to be nothing more than the young owner of the Broken Bow cattle spread. But when danger threatened innocent people, and when evildoers plotted against justice, then Steve Adams' rancher disappeared. And in his place came a mysterious, stalwart Indian. Wearing the dress and war paint of a Comanche, riding the great golden Palomino, galloping out of the darkness to take up the cause of law and order throughout the West, comes the legendary figure of Straight Arrow. Boys and girls, how would you like to own a beautiful golden Palomino colt? The son of the mighty horse Straight Arrow rides on our new radio program. You might be the very one to win. And we'll tell you more about it later in the program. First, a word to the boys. Are you high man on your baseball team? And you girls, are you always leading the race when you're roller skating with your gang? If you want to be in front all the time, you need plenty of energy. Energy spelled Nabisco for Nabisco Shredded Wheat. Yep, a big bowl full of Nabisco Shredded Wheat for breakfast, plus plenty of fruit and milk, will not only start you off right, it will help give you a head start on the other kids. Because Nabisco Shredded Wheat is made from real whole wheat. And believe me, that means real energy in every spoonful. Tell Mother you want to keep ahead of the crowd. Ask her to get a box of Nabisco Shredded Wheat today. And now... Straight Arrow! The route of the Sawbuck stage line between Flint Rock and Calvados runs along the flat prairie and then through a steep cut in the Sangre Cristos Mountains. The mountain road begins only a dozen miles from the ranch house of the Broken Bow cattle spread. It's a hot afternoon, and Steve Adams, owner of the Broken Bow, and his friend Packy are out hunting strays. As they come around a jutting shoulder of rock, Steve Adams calls a halt. His keen, dark Indian eyes under the brim of his Stetson, sweeping over the buffalo grass and the foothills of the Sangre Cristos.
Oh, son.
No sign of those strays around here, Packy. Reckon they must have drifted some other direction. Can't see hide nor hair of them.
You can't, eh? Now, Steve, you mean a scrunchy old placer miner like me's got better eyes than Straight Arrow?
Packy, I told you dozens of times, don't call me by that handle.
Oh, why not? That's who you are, right enough. Straight Arrow, the mysterious Comanche Indian that rides that big Palomino horse.
I'm not riding him now. As far as everybody's concerned, I'm just plain Steve Adams, cattleman.
Everybody except me, Steve. But don't fret, I only call you Straight Arrow when we're alone.
All right, Packy, never mind. You were saying something about my eyes.
Yep, sure was. I spotted a cloud of dust that you didn't. See it yonder up there in the foothills?
I saw it a long while ago, Packy.
You did?
Yep, and it's not our strays. It's a Sawbuck stage for Calvados. That dust is moving right above where the trail ought to be.
Ah, shucks. And I figured for once I'd outsmarted you. Yep, it's a stage right enough.
We can't see it, just the dust, but... Packy.
Huh? What's biting you, Steve?
It stopped.
Well, what if it has? Maybe it sprung an axle or broke a trace or... Gee, how's it back, Steve? Shooting!
Yeah, Packy. I reckon what stopped that stagecoach is a holdup. Come on, prod up your pony. We got to get there pronto. Hit him, old son.
by Steve Adams, the men swung their mounts up the rocky trail that coiled like a snake between the rising cliffs of stone. Above the sound of hoofs, they could hear the rattle of gunfire as they urged their horses onward. Then the shooting died down. They burst out into a clearing on top of a rise and saw the stagecoach. One man lay unconscious, sprawled across the boot. Another man, the driver, was kneeling on the blanket seat, firing across the top of the coach.
Whoa, whoa there. Driver, which way'd they go?
Yonder, mister, down over the falls. But he's gone, no sense wasting.
We'll have a look, see? Get up there. Oh, 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 there. Oh.
Hey, gents. Hey, gents, wait up.
No sign of him, huh? That's what I figured.
You're the driver?
Yeah, my name's Murdoch. Been driving stage for the Sawbuck for 3 years.
Anybody hurt? I noticed that other gent wasn't doing much stirring around.
Lacey? Oh, he's all right. Got clipped by a ricochet. He's coming around.
What about your passengers?
Not hauling any passengers this trip. All we was carrying was some Wells Fargo securities. That's what that ornery sidewinder was after. Blast his hide. Drew down on us before we can make a move. Then he ambles up calm as you please and gets the securities. Knew right where they was.
He knew where they were, huh?
Yep. And there was something mighty familiar about that hombre. I could swear I'd seen him before.
He was masked?
Sure. Stetson pulled down and wore a handkerchief. But even
here,
so...
Here, just a minute.
Huh?
What's that?
What?
Right at your feet.
Well, I'll be dogged. Steve, it's your knife. A Bowie knife.
Yeah, Pecky. Lying right here on the trail. Hasn't been here long. It's clean and shiny. Wait a minute. There's a name on the handle.
Murdoch! Murdoch, what happened? Okay, get away with the stuff.
He did, Lacey. But maybe he won't get far. This gent just found his Bowie knife. Mister, what's the name on that knife?
It's Randy Culver.
Randy Culver? Murdoch.
Yeah, Lacey. That sure ties in. I knew I'd seen him before. Ornery little polecat. So he'd rob his own outfit, would
now,
he?
Now, just a minute, Murdoch. Back trail there. I don't savvy. This Randy Culver works for the Sawbuck stage?
He does, mister. Calvados office.
And you think it was him?
Mister, we're plumb positive.
Yeah, it all figures out, stranger. Young Culver knew we was carrying them securities, and he can use them. His mother's sick, needs cash for a trip back east to get operated on.
Yeah, but I never calculated that little squirt to try to get it this way. Well, one thing, sure, we'll pick him up easy.
You will? How?
I'll bet gold dust to a cactus plant Culver headed straight back to Calvados, just as innocent as you please. Mister, give me that knife. Lacey and me are driving on to Calvados.
Packy, let's amble along with him. I'm kind of curious to see this Randy Culver gent.
Several hours later, just at twilight, the Sawbuck stage rolls into Calvados and pulls up in front of the company office. Steve Adams and Packy drop off their ponies at the hitching rail and follow the stagecoach men inside. A kerosene lamp hangs from the ceiling, casting a yellow glow on the small room. And behind a desk, a tall young man looks up as they enter.
Well, Murdoch, Lacey, howdy. Stage is late. You have any trouble?
Here, Culver. We had trouble. And I reckon you know all about it. Here. Is this yours?
Yeah, it's my knife. Where'd you find it?
Well, where do you think? Up in the Sangre Cristos, right where you dropped it after you robbed the stage.
Robbed the stage? Now look here, Murdoch.
Murdoch, maybe we ought to search his desk. It'd be just the kind of slick trick it'd pull, hiding them Wells Fargo securities right under our noses.
Good idea, Lacey. Culver, stand away from that desk.
Sure, sure, but you're heading up the wrong trail. I would...
Murdoch, here they are, right in the bottom drawer.
Well, Culver...
Well, I don't know how they got there.
Lacey, go call the sheriff.
No, no, you can't. My mom's sick. You can't.
Call the sheriff, Lacey.
Don't move, Lacey. Don't nobody move.
Here, Culver, put down that gun.
You keep out of this, stranger. None of your affair. Put your hands up, all of you.
You're not leaving, Culver.
Keep your hands off your guns, Murdoch. I'm warning you.
Try and stop me. If it's gun smoke you want, then you...
Steve! Steve, look out!
He's gone! Come on, Steve!
Wait! He smashed the last. The place is on fire. Never mind him. We'll catch up with him later. Put the fire out or the whole dang office will burn to ashes.
It took a few minutes for the four men to subdue the flames started by the broken kerosene lamp. By the time they got outside, a crowd had gathered, and there was no sign of Randy Culver.
Randy, where's my son, Randy?
Excuse me, ma'am. You're Mrs. Culver, Randy's mother?
Yes. Where is he? What's happened?
Ma'am, I'm afraid your son is in a heap of trouble.
Trouble? Randy? Oh, no.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Culver. Me and Lazy here can attest to that. Your son tried to rob the stagecoach.
Not Randy, no. Where is he?
He got on a horse and skedaddled while we was putting out the fire. Mrs. Culver, your son's an outlaw, that's what.
Oh, please. Randy'd never do a thing like that. He'd never...
Murdoch, that's enough. Oh. Ma'am, you're not well. Oh. Packy, lend a hand. We got to get Mrs. Culver back to her home.
Why, sure thing, Steve. Now, ma'am, don't you fret none now. Everything will be all right.
The widowed woman lived in a small, bare shack at the end of the narrow main street of Calvados. Steve and Packy led her there, made her comfortable, and a few minutes later went back to the hitching rail where they had left their ponies.
Sure is too doggone bad. A nice woman like that and her son has to be crooked. Reckon he'll get away, Steve?
I don't know, Packy. They sent a posse after him, but he had a good start. It's mighty dark.
But we can find him, Packy.
We? Well, Steve, this ain't any of our concern.
I think it is. And the sooner we get to Sundown Valley, the better.
Sundown Valley? Steve, do you mean...
Yes, Packy. Sundown Valley in the hidden cave. It's time for me to hit the trail as Straight Arrow.
A short distance from the Broken Bow cattle spread lay Sundown Valley. And in it, a weather-beaten mine shack which stood at the entrance to an apparently deserted mine shaft. But the mine shaft is not deserted. Within, through a secret entrance known only to Steve Adams and Packy, lies a vast subterranean cave. The walls of the cave glitter with crystals of gold. From some unknown source comes light that spreads a shimmering gleam everywhere. And as the two men enter, a great golden palomino tosses its head and whinnies eagerly.
Steady, big horse.
A Comanche bow and Comanche arrows hang on the wall. There's Comanche war paint and Comanche garb. Quickly, Steve Adams changes, and in a moment...
Steady, great stallion. Steady. Stand ready. This is your master who speaks. This is Straight Arrow.
A clatter of hoofs in the vast vaulted cave. An Indian war whoop that rings from the glittering rock. Out into the night gallops the great golden palomino, and riding bareback, clad in Indian garb from head to toe, Straight Arrow on the trail of justice.
Faster, great speed to Calvados. Faster!
About Straight Arrow in a minute. And remember, in just a few minutes, we're going to tell you more about how you can win a beautiful Palomino colt, son of the famous stallion ridden by Straight Arrow. Right now, let's try our hand at a little arithmetic. The way I figure it, there are 14 hours between your evening meal and next morning's breakfast, right? And that means you need to eat more for breakfast. That's why Nabisco shredded wheat is tops to start off the day. Pure whole wheat with nothing added, Nabisco shredded wheat gives you plenty of stick-to-the-ribs energy. Set you up fine for that baseball game at recess. And say, tell Mom that she won't have any trouble getting you or the rest of the family down to breakfast once she calls out that Nabisco shredded wheat and sliced bananas are on the table. Yep, those crunchy Nabisco shredded wheat biscuits, swell with milk and sugar, are extra fine topped with a layer of fruit. A one-dish breakfast, I'd call it. And one way of having everybody saying good morning and meaning it. When you say shredded wheat, be sure it's Nabisco shredded wheat. The real, the original shredded wheat. Look for the picture of Niagara Falls on the package. Look for Nabisco shredded wheat at your grocer's tomorrow. Once again, Steve Adams' rancher has disappeared. And in his place has come the legendary figure of the Comanche Indian known as Straight Arrow. Now, Now, in war paint and Indian garb, a Comanche bow slung over one shoulder and over the other a quiver of arrows, Straight Arrow travels through the night with his friend Packy beside him. Until, in the moonlight, they see in the distance the sleeping town of Calvados.
Slow, great steed. My friend, from here we must go as quietly as the prairie wolf. The house of Randy Culver is on the far side of the town.
But what are we going there for? We was there early this evening.
As Steve Adams, Packy. Now it shall be Straight Arrow who will speak to Randy Culver.
But he ain't there.
He will be there. Come, my friend. Up, great steed.
Circling the town, Straight Arrow and Packy rein up in the draw not far from the Culver home. Then, leaving Packy with the horses, the Indian slips silently into the shadows. A few moments later, he moves quietly toward the door of the house. Inside, Mrs. Culver is talking to her son, the fugitive, Randy Culver.
Yes, Mom?
I know you're near frantic for cash to send me east so I can be operated on. But, Randy, son, did you do it?
No, Ma, I swear I didn't. I don't savvy how my knife got up there on the trail. I lost it 2 days ago. And as for how those securities got in my desk, well, I don't savvy that either. But I didn't do it. What in thunder? An arrow. A Comanche arrow.
Do not be alarmed, my friend. That arrow is mine.
Injun, who are you? What do you want?
I opened your door quietly as you spoke. I am your friend. Men call me Straight Arrow.
Straight Arrow? Injun, I've heard of you. You help out those in trouble. I beg of you, help my son. He didn't do this. He's innocent.
Straight Arrow knows. When there is a crooked trail, Straight Arrow knows. But, Culver, you cannot stay here. Already 3 men approach. I saw them from the darkness.
3 men? Mom, it must be the sheriff.
Listen well. You will go up into the Sangre Cristo Mountains.
Yes, yes, into the mountains.
You will stay there until I come for you.
But how will you find him?
I shall find him. But he must trust me. Already there is a reward posted for his capture. The sooner he... So, the call of the wolf, that is our signal. The men who would capture you are very near. Go, Culver.
But what about you, Straight Arrow?
They shall not capture me. Go. Go at once.
Sheriff. Yeah. Here's the Culver shack. If you ask me, this here's a waste of time. Right, Lacey?
Yeah, Murdoch. Culver won't be there.
Yeah, maybe not, gents. But I want to talk to Mrs. Culver anyhow. Come on. She might have some idea where her son is.
If she does, she won't tell us.
And even so. After all, Murdoch, didn't you tell me you got another Wells Fargo shipment in a couple of days?
Yeah, day after tomorrow. $100,000. What of it?
Plenty. If Culver's still loose, he might try for it.
Nearly a chance. Me and Lacey will be ready for him this time. Here we are, Sheriff. Here's the Culver place now.
Get to one side.
What in blazes? An engine.
One side.
That engine. He jumped right up out of the brush. Where'd he go?
I don't know. He hightailed past us faster than a spooked antelope.
Hey, there he goes.
One Palomino.
Faster. Jumping cactus. Sheriff, did you hear that? He's got a Palomino horse. That means...
Yeah, there's only one hombre with a coyote like that. Gents, that engine was Straight Arrow. But I don't savvy. What's he got to do with Culver?
The next day, just at twilight, Straight Arrow located Randy Culver in the Sangre Cristos Mountains. They made camp and stayed there overnight. And in Calvados on the following morning, a short while after Murdoch and Lacey drove out of town in the stagecoach, Packy sauntered into the office of Sheriff Ferguson.
Morning, Sheriff. You call me Packy?
Yeah, howdy. What can I do for you?
You still got a reward out for the capture of Randy Culver?
Yeah, mister. 500 cash. What about it?
Oh, nothing. Excepting yesterday when I was on my way back to Broken Bow Cattle Spread. That's Steve Adams' ranch.
Never mind Steve Adams. What about Culver?
Sheriff, he's up in the Sangre Cristos.
What? Mister, are you sure?
Certain sure. I cut his trail yesterday. Caught a glimpse of him. And that ain't all, Sheriff. There was an Injun with him. Looked like a Comanche from the war paint, riding a giant Palomino.
Straight Arrow.
Huh?
Straight Arrow, that's who that is. The two of them, huh? Most likely in cahoots. And by thunder, the stagecoach. It just left. It's carrying 100,000 in Wells Fargo securities. And with those two up there in the Sangre Cristos... Kincaid, Shorty, Desert, get your guns and saddle up.
Trouble?
Plenty trouble. Culver and Straight Arrow, both of them up in the mountains. And the stagecoach heading that way now. We got to get up there pronto.
A few hours later, as the sun climbed over the Sangre Cristos, Murdoch and Lacey drove the stagecoach up the first slope of the mountain trail. In the distance, still well behind them, came the sheriff's posse and Packy. And in the mountains themselves, on a high crag from which they could see the stagecoach as well as the distant posse, two men sat their horses. One of them was Randy Culver. The other, Straight Arrow.
Straight Arrow, there's the stagecoach. And yonder comes a posse. But I don't savvy what you're up to.
In a moment, Culver, all shall be clear. That stagecoach carries 100,000 in Wells Fargo paper. Much more than the 10,000 you were accused of trying to steal.
Hey, the stage. It stopped.
Yes, my friend. And now it is time for us to go. Quickly, down the mountain. We must show ourselves to the posse.
The posse? You mean let them see us?
Yes, they must see us. Because then they shall come after us. We must make certain they come after us. Up, great stallion, down the mountain.
Yes, that's it. Hey!
Well, mister, here's the Sangre Cristos and nary a sign of Culver or that Injun. Only thing we've seen is the dust from that stagecoach. You certain of your facts?
Dead certain, Sheriff. Culver and Straight Arrow up ahead there somewhere.
I hope you're right. I tell you, if we don't locate them soon... What's in thunder?
Hey, Sheriff, up ahead, look. It's the Injun, and Culver's with them.
It's them, both of them. After them. Spur up your ponies. No, no shooting. They're still out of range. Hold your fire and ride. Get up there, hide.
Once certain that the posse was on their trail, Straight Arrow turned his stallion up the mountain. Together, he and Randy Culver followed each curve of the trail until ahead of them, they saw the stagecoach standing. Then they stopped.
Oh, great steed.
Straight Arrow, what do we stop for? The posse's after us.
We wait here, Culver.
But we can't wait. They're coming, I tell you.
Stand your ground, Culver. Trust me and let them come.
On galloped the posse up the curving trail, their guns ready. Watching for Randy Culver and Straight Arrow. Suddenly, they burst into view, and as they did, Straight Arrow threw up his hand in the sign of peace.
Halt! Let there be no shooting! Halt!
Well, so you give up without a fight, do you? Don't try anything, Straight Arrow. Nor you neither, Culver.
We do not fight honest men, Sheriff.
Honest men, is it? After Culver here tried to rob the stage?
Culver did not rob the stage. Look ahead, there in the distance. There is your stagecoach. And if you look closely, you will see the men who are responsible.
What in blazes you talking about, Straight Arrow? We can see the stage all right with Murdoch and Lacey beside it. But even so, what in tarnation...
Yes, Sheriff. You see what they are doing. They are opening the Wells Fargo strongbox.
Well, doggone to think.
They are the criminals, Sheriff. Randy Culver's knife was stolen from him, planted by them beside the trail. The securities that were found in Culver's desk were also planted.
All right, gravy, I savvy now. Murdoch and Lacey did so that they could get a bigger haul this time and put the blame on young Culver.
Yes, Sheriff. You see them? They're caching the valuables beneath a rock.
I see them, the ornery skunks. All right, gents.
One moment, Sheriff. I have a better plan. Murdoch and Lacey have not seen us. Bring your posse back to Calvados. Let us go to your office and wait.
Straight Arrow, here comes Murdoch and Lacey now. Heading right here for my office. Quick, you and Randy Culver get out of sight.
We shall, Sheriff. Come, Randy, right behind this door.
Now, Packy, the rest of you gents. Just set easy like nothing was going on at all.
You bet. That's what we'll do.
Sheriff Ferguson, stagecoach has been robbed.
Well, howdy, Murdoch. What are you and Lacey doing back here in Calvados? You left only this morning.
Didn't you hear me, Sheriff? We've been held up again.
Yeah, up in the Sangre de Cristos. They got the 100,000 worth fog of paper.
Well, I'll be doggone. You don't say. Who did it, Murdoch?
Who do you think? Randy Culver, of course. Randy Culver and that Straight Arrow engine. Well, don't just sit there. Get your horses. Get a posse. We got to try
to... One moment, Murdoch.
What in... Murdoch. It's Straight Arrow. And Culver.
So Culver and I robbed your stagecoach? That is very strange, since both of us have been with the sheriff since noon. Ever since we saw you and Lacey rob the stage yourselves.
You mean...
We saw you ourselves, and so did the sheriff and his posse.
Lacey, we've been tricked.
Hey, watch out!
Drop them. Drop your guns.
Let go of my wrist, you ornery redskin. All right. Here's my gun.
Yours too, Lacey.
Thanks, Straight Arrow. Those polecats were quick on the draw, but you sure got them first. All right, gents. Take these two along and put them behind bars.
All right. Under way, boys.
Straight Arrow, I want to ask your pardon. And there's 500 cash reward coming to you for this.
No, Sheriff. I have no need for it. Give it to Randy Culver.
To me, Straight Arrow?
Yes, Randy. Use it for your mother to make her well. And now, adios, my friends.
Mr. Straight Arrow?
Yes, Sheriff.
We'll see you again, won't we?
Perhaps, my friend. Perhaps you will. But only when danger threatens. When there is injustice, then you may look for Straight Arrow.
Wasn't that an exciting story? And wasn't that a terrific stallion, Straight Arrow Road? How would you like to have a beautiful Palomino colt all your own? Well, next week on this program, we're going to tell you more about this wonderful horse. Some boy or girl listening right now may become the proud owner of the most beautiful golden Palomino colt you've ever seen. This colt is valued at $1,000, and there will be other valuable prizes, too. So listen in to Straight Arrow next week and hear more about this wonderful contest. In the meantime, remember, when you have a morning of good hard work or play before you, pile an extra crunchy Nabisco shredded wheat biscuit into your breakfast bowl. There's nothing like Nabisco shredded wheat, the original Niagara Falls product. It's pure whole wheat made into toasty golden biscuits as only Nabisco can make them. Look for the picture of Niagara Falls on the package and make sure you get Nabisco. N-A-B-I-S-C-O. Nabisco shredded wheat.
Hey, Steve. Steve, we're heading for the Cimarron. What's up?
Rustlers, Packy. We're out after a gang of thieving cattle rustlers. And before we're through, they'll come face to face with Straight Arrow.
Next week, another exciting adventure of the Old West, brought to you by the makers of Nabisco Shredded Wheat. Listen, same time, same station. Ride the trail with... Straight Arrow. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
The first program in the series Straight Arrow, one of many children's Western series which permeated the airwaves during radio's golden era. From May 6th of 1948 on Mutual, we heard Stage from Calvados, also known as Framed. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website for much more info about the show, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. If you want the playlist or streaming audio for this episode, look for Upstate Radio Theater program number 1902. We have two programs from the 1930s to conclude the hour. We'll listen first to an episode of Blair of the Mounties. This syndicated series ran during 1938 and quite possibly was the inspiration behind the much more popular Challenge of the Yukon, a series created by George Trindle. The series tells the story of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in the years leading up to World War I and stars Colonel Rhys Davies as Blair. This broadcast was released for syndication on September 5th of 1938. It's called The Disappearance of Alexander Pressman. We'll then switch gears completely to conclude the hour with a bit of comedy, as we have an episode of Laugh Parade. This syndicated series from 1934 combined sketch comedy and music. The first song on this particular episode, no date given for this transcription, I Hate to Talk About Myself. It's Blair of the Mounties and Laugh Parade, wrapping up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Blair of the Mounties. We present episode 32 in the dramatic series Blair of the Mounties. Although the character names in the following story are entirely fictional, the story itself is largely founded on historical fact, a story of long-delayed justice. Officially, it is one of the few cases in which Inspector Blair failed to bring the author of a crime to justice. And yet, strangely enough, a case in which the final outcome brought him no regret. We present to you the disappearance of Alexander Pressman.
Dr. Sherwood, you came up very quietly. No, haven't had a strike for the last hour. The sun's getting too bright. I think I'll call it off till evening.
I don't think you'll get very much till the sun drops a bit. That's why I came along. I want to have a talk.
Indeed?
Let's sit here in the shade a while.
Good. I suppose you'll want to talk about this Pressman mystery.
So you guessed the real reason for my invitation, eh?
Not a very difficult thing to guess, Doctor. Prominent man disappears under very strange circumstances. I get a sudden invitation for a week's fishing from a man I never met. It's fairly obvious.
Yes, I suppose you're right. As a matter of fact, I rather expected you'd see through this scheme of mine. Well, let's discuss the business question.
Do I understand you wish me to act for you in this investigation?
Yes, that was my idea.
Apart from the fact that you were Mr. Pressman's physician, what is your connection with him?
Well, that's a fair question. I'm his executor in case of death.
I see.
Now, the first thing is, will you undertake this job?
Certainly. I'd be glad to do so.
Excellent.
Yes, now the case.
You know the facts?
I believe so. Mr. Pressman was a wealthy man, rather eccentric. He lived in fear of an attack on his life, I understand.
Yes, that is correct.
Yes. He disappeared suddenly in broad daylight 3 weeks ago. Since then, not the slightest trace of him has been found by the police. Roughly speaking, that's all I know, Doctor.
You have the main facts, but of course there are important details known to me.
No doubt. Now a question or two, Doctor. What do you know of Mr. Pressman's early life?
He started life as a poor boy in New York. From there he went west, made money up in the Klondike.
Now that's interesting. All right, go on, Doctor.
From there he went to California, made a lot of money. His reputation was not a good one, but he was very successful. 5 years ago, he retired and came to England.
All right, now these threats against his life. Know anything about them?
Latterly, yes. Pressman was, or if he's still alive, I should say is, a very peculiar type. I don't think he had a real friend in the world. There was a strain of cruelty in his nature.
I believe he delighted in other people's misery.
Nice sort of chap.
Yes. As regards his fear of enemies, he received a number of threatening letters. They started after his wife's death and arrived regularly every month. The local police have the letters.
Anything special about them?
They are composed of words clipped from newspapers. The strangest thing about them was that they all mentioned June 21st, the date of his marriage, and also the exact date of his disappearance.
That's queer. Now, the details of this disappearance.
It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Pressman had a suite of rooms overlooking the park on the second floor of his house. The room has large French windows which open onto a stone balcony.
How large is the balcony?
Runs the full width of these private apartments. It's the only place Pressman ventured out to take exercise.
Anybody with him at the time of his disappearance?
Not precisely. There was a man on guard in the passage outside the door of his suite, and another out on the balcony with Pressman.
He was pretty well guarded.
Yes. The disappearance was rather dramatic. Pressman had gone out onto the balcony. He was chatting with his personal guard when the alarm bell rang inside the private apartments. The guard rushed into the apartments and found nothing there. When he got back to the terrace, Pressman had disappeared. That's the whole story, Inspector Blair.
Not a trace of him since that moment, you say?
Not the slightest.
A very pretty case, Doctor. Now, how about looking over the house?
I can arrange that whenever you wish.
Sooner the better. How about this afternoon?
Certainly. I'll telephone to Lang, Mr. Pressman's private secretary. He'd be glad to show you around.
Good. You'll come along, of course.
Well, if you think it necessary.
I'd much prefer it, Dr. Sheridan.
Very well, then. Suppose we run over to my house for lunch, and I'll drive you out to Stony Haven afterwards. That do?
Excellent.
Come along, then. Yes. Oh, there's Lang.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Lang, I want you to meet my friend, Inspector Blair.
How are you, Lang?
How do you do, Inspector? What's this, a professional visit?
You mean, am I employed to inquire into the disappearance of Mr. Pressman?
Well, since you put it so plainly, yes, that's what I meant.
No, I'm just a detective on vacation, interested, of course, in such an unusual disappearance.
It certainly was unusual. Want to look around?
Yes, if you don't mind. I suppose that's the balcony yonder that you spoke of, Doctor.
Yes, that's it.
No way to get to it except through the private room?
None whatever. It's a 30-foot drop. And there were people working in the grounds. Gardeners and so on.
I see. Can I have a look at that, at those rooms?
Well, sure thing. Right this way.
Thanks.
This way, Inspector. You see, the window leads directly out to the terrace.
I see. How about this alarm that went off just before the disappearance? Was that accounted for?
Well, no. It was quite a puzzle. The rooms are wired. The alarm went off a couple of times before by accident. But the puzzle is, why did it sound just at that particular time?
It was checked, of course.
Yes, the police checked it over. Nothing wrong with it. Just went off, that's all.
And within a minute of that alarm sounding, Mr. Pressman was gone.
Within a few seconds, I should say. Simmons, the man on guard, hardly waited a moment inside to make sure that there was nothing wrong. Then he rushed back, and the chief had disappeared.
There are three dimensions here, of course. A man would have to go somewhere, either down over the balcony, out through the rooms, or up on the roof.
And all three equally impossible?
Two of them, yes. But how about that roof?
That was nearly the first thing that we thought of. But it couldn't be. There were workmen on the roof, mending the bricks in the chimney.
Which chimney?
Well, you can see the top of it here, the big one over there to the left.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see the new bricks.
Yes, they acted according to instructions.
Whose instructions?
Well, Mr. Pressman's. The chimney was dangerous. He wanted it very strongly reinforced.
I see. What's on the other side of this house?
Nothing but the cliff. A sheer drop of over 100 feet to the sea.
Any beach at the foot of the cliffs?
Practically none. There's no chance for anyone to get up the cliff. Mr. Pressman liked the place for that reason. Boats hardly ever come in there.
Well, that's a mystery, sure enough. And the police never got a single clue.
Not a thing. Anything else you'd like to see?
No, after all, it's no business of mine. I'm afraid I was rather inquisitive. Matter of habit, I suppose.
Oh, that's all right. Come and see us again sometime.
Thanks. Well, Doctor, let's get along.
All right.
Goodbye, Lang. Glad to have met you.
Goodbye, Inspector.
Goodbye, Lang. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, Blair, did you see anything interesting?
No, can't say I did, although I'm interested in that fellow Lang. I rather like him.
Yes, he's not the kind of man you'd suspect of any crooked work.
Oh, no, he's not the criminal type. But he strikes me as the sort of man who'd pay his debts.
Oh, yes, yes. Lang's a very honorable sort of chap.
What next, Inspector?
I think I'll get you to run me back to the hotel. I want to go up to London.
To London?
Yes.
Rather sudden decision, isn't it?
Yes. I'll be back probably tomorrow. There are one or two things connected with the story you told me of Pressman's life that I'd like to check up.
Right. Then we'll get along.
All right.
Inspector Blair?
Ah, good evening, Lang. Very good of you to come. Dr. Sherwood is dining with me, too.
That's so? Good.
Yes, he'll be here later. I asked you to come half an hour early because I want to have a little talk with you.
Why, oh, yes, certainly.
It's about the Pressman case.
Oh, still interested in that disappearance?
Yes, still interested. But my interest in the case is nearly over. It's going to end in about half an hour.
What?
Oh, never mind that. Lang, you're a Canadian, aren't you?
Eh? Well, yes. Well, strictly speaking, I am. Although I was brought up in the States.
I thought so. You were born in Dawson City in 1900.
Why? Well, what of it?
Nothing. I remember the day well. A bitter cold day in spring. The ice just starting to move in the Yukon River.
You? You were there?
Yes, I was there. I knew your father well. He was a good friend of mine. But his name wasn't Lang.
See here, Inspector. I don't know what you're after, but...
Better sit still, Lang. I mean you no harm. This is a public place. You'd better listen to what I have to say.
All right.
Your father had a partner named Pressman. He had a bad name in Dawson.
I'll say he had.
Your father was killed in a slide on the old Cinderella claims. They never found his body. Pressman was blamed, but there was no evidence against him. None that would hold in court.
That's right, but he was guilty just the same.
Yes, I think so, too.
You do? I don't understand. What is it you want?
Not what you think, but I'd just like to tell you an interesting theory.
Well, go ahead.
This man Pressman double-crossed every partner he ever had. Three men in particular, your father and two others. Each of these men had a son. These three boys were close friends. There was you, John Leeson, and Clyde Musgrove.
That's right.
What held these three together was a sort of a pact that they formed in childhood. That someday, they'd pay the family debt to Pressman.
That's a guess, isn't it?
Well, call it a guess. Leeson is a contracting engineer. Musgrove is an architect. Both of these men were in London just before the Pressman disappearance. And you were down here, isn't that so?
So far, it's all quite true.
Good. Now let's come to the day of Pressman's disappearance. There are two workmen on the roof. Pretty good workman, too. One an engineer, the other an architect. Pressman was particular. Wanted good men on those repairs. That's what you got for him.
You can't prove that.
No, just a guess. The alarm went off in Pressman's room. That was easy. The guard rushed inside, and a noose dropped over Pressman's head from above.
Oh, what's the use of going any further, Inspector?
Hold on now, young fellow. Don't be impatient. I'm just in the middle of my theory. Pressman was jerked up over the roof in a matter of seconds. There was a block and tackle rigged on the chimney. They swung him out over the other side and dropped him over the cliff.
What do you expect me to say?
Nothing. I'm anxious over one little point, though.
What's that?
You see, for a perfect crime, the body has to be disposed of properly. Now, if it was picked up later and dropped into deep water with weights attached, I should feel that it was a perfect job and that our friend Pressman would never be found.
Don't worry.
Good. One likes to be sure of these little matters. Well, here's our friend, Dr. Sherwood.
Hello, Blair. Hello. Hope I'm not late.
No, you're just in time. And by the way, Doctor, Lang and I have been going over the details of the disappearance. I've come to a definite conclusion.
And that is?
That Mr. Pressman will never be found.
Well, glad to have your opinion, Inspector. You have listened to another episode in Blair of the Mounties.
The Laugh Parade.
Just laugh. major of our last parade, Ken Niles.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. It's certainly a pleasure to welcome you again. And, of course, we're going to present our usual array of sparkling talent. By way of illustration, there are the three ambassadors, probably the only three ambassadors who have never gotten their country into a jam. Of course, I suppose that being musicians, they occasionally have a jam session, but that's neither here nor there. The fact remains that they are the very first act on our bill, and very, very modestly, they're singing, I Hate to Talk About Myself. Okay, boys, we'll give you the red spotlight to help your modest blushes.
I got a way of doing things, hate to talk about myself. Got a way about myself with the one I love. Got a way of telling things, I can tell that I'm nascent by the tender embraces of the one I love. I wonder if she's easy to please, I wonder if I'm that good. But nevertheless, I have to confess that she keeps on telling the neighborhood that I got a way of doing things, hate to talk about myself. Got a way about myself with the one that I love. I got a way of doing things, hate to talk about myself. But I just can't help the things I do. Everything you talk about is on account of you, dear. Got a way of telling things like plans for the future and the wedding rings. By your tender embrace, I can tell it is true that I'm gonna rate 4 stars with you. I wonder if she's, easy to please, Nevertheless, I gotta confess that she likes checkers and I like chess. But I got a way of doing things, hate to talk about myself. Got a way about myself, am sure about myself. Can you blame me if I'm in love with you?
Two more outstanding entertainers make their appearance on our show. They are Jeanette Gilmore and Charlie Wells, guaranteed to be public nuisances of the first water. However, don't let them scare you away, because I'll personally guarantee you'll be entertained. Okay, Jeanette and Charlie, do your stuff.
Oh, I say, Jenny.
Now what do you want?
There's a man out here wants to know if you're the original Jeanette Gilmore.
Oh, no, I'm not the original Jeanette Gilmore. No, Jeanette's away on a vacation. I'm just carrying on for Jeanette while she's away.
She's huh?
I say she's away on a vacation. I'm just carrying on.
You're
all.
Just carrying on?
Just carrying on.
Well, if there's any married men out here that would like to take a vacation, I'll carry on for them.
Oh, stop clowning. You know, Charlie, you don't look so good. How do you feel?
Oh, that I don't know. It's a long, long story and a dirty one, too.
You look a little like you're seasick.
Oh, I am.
What's the matter with you?
I'm in love.
No.
Gosh, yes.
Look who's in love.
You ever been in love?
Oh, yes, I've been in love. I like it, don't you?
Oh, I'm goofy about it.
It's invigorating.
Uh-huh.
It sort of makes a man of you.
Whoopee twice.
Tell me, is the feeling mutual?
Is the feeling, huh?
Well, is the feeling mutual?
Oh, it's potential.
Did you ever take your girl out in the moonlight?
Oh, we moon in the moonlight.
Did you ever kiss her?
I never kissed her.
You never kissed her? Oh, what are your lips for?
Hamburgers.
Did you ever hug her?
I hugged her once.
Oh, did she show her gratitude?
Did she show her... Huh?
Well, did she show her gratitude?
Say, I'll put soap in your mouth for talking like that in here.
Oh, you just don't understand what love is.
You know what it is?
Do I know what it is?
Will you tell me?
Listen, have you ever been out in the moonlight all alone, and all of a sudden you get a funny feeling you want someone? Then you look up and you see two little lovebirds cooing to one another way up on a branch, and down below sit two sweethearts, and he's saying, I love you. Then all of a sudden, he takes her little face between his two hands. He looks deep into her eyes. She looks into his eyes. Ah, that's love. That's true love.
Oh, guys, you do care for me, don't you?
And now, guess who? Gail Page, no less. And, of course, she's singing a song of love entitled...
Don't mention love to me.
Oh, I wasn't mentioning it to you, Gail. I was mentioning it to our audience. You know, our dear, dear public. You see, I just couldn't remember the name of your song for a moment.
Well, that is the name of my song, Ken. Don't mention love to me.
It is? Well, such a song for one like you to be singing. Well, that's life, I guess. Go ahead, Gail. The spotlight's yours.
There is one thing I know. If I let myself go, and our lips should ever touch, I would love you much too much. It is better far to share just a casual affair. So before our love is born, I must tell you this to warn. My heart is not a plaything, parting is not a game thing, darling. Don't mention love to me. Romance may bring us sorrow, let's be friends on the morrow, darling. Don't mention love to me. I can't love you discreetly, no halfway measures for me. I must love you completely if this should end. Where would I be? You smile, I'm overpowered, I fall, but I'm a coward, darling. Don't mention love.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you. Your singing is exceeded only by your charming self.
Why, Mr. Niles?
Oh, Ken, to you. Well, folks, there goes Gail, a page from my book of life. And now we bring you the Roberts Brothers once more, those three diplomats of harmony who have a very nifty and easy-to-listen-to theory to expound. That's how rhythm was born. Okay, boys, swing it.
They was the sins in the river. Cold waters made them all quiver. That's how rhythm was born.
Whining folks came down to gather round that old swanny shore. Caught crazy, sang its praise, cried, give us more.
Asked any Creole or highbrow who brought that movement to Jigtown, they'll give you high up slowly. That's how rhythm was. I got rhythm, I got music, I got rhythm. Who can ask for anything more?
Come.
And with that bit of music and comedy from the crew at Laugh Parade, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I hope you enjoyed my selections. Please join me again when you can for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.